Hi, this is your host, Lori Moylov with the Limitless Podcast, and I have a special guest today, Reuben Cohen, who's an award-winning mastering engineer. He has won a Latin Grammy for his work on Diego Torres's album, Distinto, and also a Tech Award for his work on the single Happy by Pharrell Williams. Some of the artists he has worked with are amazing award-winning artists, including Metallica, Pharrell Williams, Incubus, Edward Sharp, and the Magnetic Zeros, Bruno Mars, India Ari. I can go on, like, it's just so amazing, the list. Kid Cudi, Sean Kingston, Skylar Grey, Far East Movement. You've also worked on soundtracks that have included Game of Thrones, Despicable Me, Slumdog Millionaire, just to name a few, and the work goes on. And I just was so impressed. And what Reuben, I guess, like, first, some of our listeners who may not know about mastering or just like what that is, can you kind of go into depth of like what mastering, how did you get into mastering and what mastering is?
Okay, so I'll start with what mastering is. It's the final process in the recording process after mixing and before distribution, manufacturing also, but now more than ever, getting to the platform, Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Amazon, et cetera. What it really is it's the practice and craft and art of creating the best connection between the artist and the listener. And that has everything to do with the production itself and where the mix is left before a mastering engineer gets their hands on it. So A lot of times when I'm explaining what mastering is, I rewind the tape and talk about mixing are in production. So when you're putting together a record, maybe it's a record recorded with microphones, instruments that are recorded in a studio or an environment where you record everything individually, sometimes all together at the same time, but you have different mics for maybe drums, bass, guitar, vocals, and all anything else that's in the arrangement, and you're recording it all, and that's part of the tracking process. Mm-hmm. And then in the mixing process, you're blending all of those elements together to create this beautiful blend, this harmonious blend that is greater than where you began. And it's not just necessarily leveling things out or EQing things. It's really weaving things together musically. It's very much a musical process. But if you're working in stereo, you're blending them to two tracks, left and right. Mm-hmm. And once you create that blend, you present that to a mastering engineer or a mastering process. And the mastering process involves glooming that further, sweetening that further, optimizing it further, but just putting the processing on those two stereo channels, left and right. Mm-hmm. So we might be adding EQ, compression, high frequency limiting, all these different processes, sometimes dealing with stereo widening, to just bring that art closer to the listener in the end, so you can fully absorb it with nothing in the way. This is, I could go into much further detail in terms of what that really is, but that's creating that connection and bringing it up to standards so it can live out in the world with other music and not be off to the side, but kind of, when people listen to music, there's a visceral expectation of, to some degree, where something should sit in terms of level, dynamic range, impact. Depending on the genre and depending on the intent behind the music. And a good mastering engineer will have a very strong sense of where that could live once the process is completed. So, and then we'll take it to that place. So a good mastering engineer will size up in their mind's eye just by listening to the mix before they even inject themselves of where this could be. And then they'll plot that journey from point A to point B in the most effortless way possible, because usually if they take that approach, it will create the ultimate connection I'm talking about. Now, records these days, more and more are done virtually. People are dealing with elements that are not recorded. They're not putting up mics in their basement or their, thousands of dollars a day, traditional studio, everybody making records in their bedrooms. And they're dealing with elements that are already been, they're sample based, they're already recorded. A lot of times they're already compressed and EQ'd. They're almost ready for, they kind of lend themselves a little bit easier to the mixing process to some degree. So it allows a lot more people with less knowledge to kind of play ball and get creative. Of course, there's always, you can go further and further down the rabbit hole and refine your abilities. But what I'm really saying is that the the sample packages available these days allows everybody to kind of get creative and come up with some pretty darn good sounding stuff. Also, the mastering software out there for the novice has gotten quite good. So people can make great sounding recordings with less knowledge than they ever had been before. You know, in other words, you know, you don't have to necessarily spend years and years and years studying something to get your dip your toe in the water.
Yeah.
You're going to turn out much, much better results. But we're at a place now where everybody can get creative and turn out stuff that sounds pretty good.
But I feel like especially with your expertise, you've spent a long time in mastering and you're kind of like the expert. You're like the doctor that comes in and does sound surgery. And so when an artist, for example, like Pharrell comes in and brings you Happy and you hear it for the first time in your like creative process, because you have such a unique creative process, what do you start doing? Like how do you, when you first kind of like your ears land on a song for an artist, like what is that process for you in the creative side?
Where I'm at now in the last maybe 7 or 8 years, I approach it this way, which is much more of a musical process more than a technical process, because just like anything else, you know, like learning an instrument, you learn all of, you learn all the notes and the mechanics and in terms of hypothetically guitar, where your fingers are going to lie. You got to strengthen the muscles. You learn some songs, but then you might learn music theory to back up what you've learned and kind of reinforce and see, okay, well, this chord goes to this chord and I can understand it on a more of a technical level, which only supports the musicality. And you've been doing, if you do that for a number of years, that all kind of fades to the background. You can pull from your toolbox when you need it, but you're going off your intuition and your musical sense that kind of is beyond your own understanding. It's more intuitive because it's so multifaceted and it's art, right? It becomes that. So mastering is for me. I understand the technical. It's the basis of what everything sits on. But my approach is very much musical. I will listen to a recording and I will figure out what needs to happen in terms of what I can introduce to bring that recording closer to me and for me to bring myself closer to it and find that place of where it's ultimately connected. And then from there, once I find that place, a little green light goes off in my mind's eye and I know, well, that's the time to really catch it, because catch it right there. Like anything else, it can just kind of go away. So you ride that energy wave, if that makes any sense. You capture it. And the good news about mastering is if you don't capture it right away, you can just do it again.
So you're constantly catching waves.
I try to put myself in a place of where I'm open to be able to, and in the right mind setting, in the right, just the right place in general, so I can be open to that and then know the ways of bringing that music towards me. And the beauty of that is where I feel connected to that music in the most optimum way. And I just like, kind of thing where it makes your hairs on your arm stick up. The beauty of that is that most people also feel the same way about that. Mm-hmm. Now, when I'm just really locked in, 99% of the time, everybody else involved in the project is feeling that too. You know, so that's great. That means we can all kind of, it's actually kind of a miracle, because it means that this is a way that we can all connect on something. Music making, it's any kind of art.
And art is all about connection, and whether that's, you know, a author, a poet, a painting, it's a form of expression. And I guess like you're also kind of expressing yourself through sound and kind of painting that picture to bring that connectivity, which is so, so cool. I wanted to know, maybe on a project that kind of like you can maybe give an example of your process and how maybe also other creatives can connect to that process. Maybe they're not in mastering, but they're writing a book or, you know, working on a business and creating these ideas. I guess in your process, can you kind of help those other creatives? Like what are things you think about and how do you kind of keep that creative wheel moving?
Well, it's a, you know, as I've been doing this, as almost 16 years now, I find that in the creative process, it's so easy for anybody to get in their own way. And usually that is, that has more to do with the mind than anything else, you know? So in terms of what I'm thinking about, I generally try not to. When I'm in my state of flow, I try not to think about anything other than maybe a memory of something that the music reminds me of. And then I'll just think about that and let my hands do all the work. And then I find myself in the place of where I want to be. So I rely on my emotions more than my mind. I rely on my mind for everything outside of the creative process, the emailing, the clients, and schedule, making sure that we, you know, hit the deadlines, making sure that I use mix 4 when I shouldn't have, instead of using mix 3, if that's the directive, all of that, you need to be on point and make sure that you're very focused in. But when you're in the state of being creative, I really like to pull that, you know, push that all to the background and just use my emotional sense to bring the most out of the music. And when I'm in that place, I find that it's very hard to miss because you're not really, it's kind of coming through you more than anything else. You can't even take ownership. As soon as you start taking ownership of it, you've lost it.
Yeah. So,
I find that you just let it come through and you practice that. And that is what, for me at least, brings the best results in the end.
That's amazing. Also, I noticed that you are working on developing a mastering plugin, and that is a whole other set of creativity. I guess what goes into like that and also running a business, I'd love for you to touch on that for inspiration for some of our creatives.
Okay. So one of the plugins we came out with maybe about 5 years ago is called the LMC. Gather and I partnered with IK Multimedia and we created the Lurston Mastering plugin. And it is it's very much to anticipate what the user needs to not get in their own way again. A lot of the presets are designed in such a way to inform the user in terms of how to guide their song through the mastering process in a way that kind of doesn't roll a gutter ball, you know, kind of do you on the straight and narrow. It does a lot of the work for you in order to do that and gives you indications of where you might be veering off this way or that way. And I have a lot of videos giving examples and explaining how to kind of steer that ship. So it's a really cool tool. We developed it for people that can't necessarily come to us all the time, or they have a project that they need results quickly, that day. And another cool feature of that plugin is that they can take it out to their car with their iPhone or their iPad, and they can just plug it in and they can actually do the processing in their car.
Wow. That's insane.
It's because you can dial in your preset or your setting in the studio, export that thing and the song to your iPad or iPhone, and then maybe do some fine tuning in the car and then bounce back and forth, kind of eliminating, you know, I saw that we used to do this back in the day. We used to make CDs in the MasterLink. This is kind of dinosaur talk now. And people would run out to the car and they, after hearing the studio, they'd want to listen to it in an environment that they were familiar with.
Yeah.
And this type of tool for bedroom producers or any really producer can do this on their own in a way that kind of closes that gap.
Wow, that's amazing, because I feel like we digest music so differently than we did in the past, like, you know, whether it's car, phone. And I feel like especially in that mastering process, you kind of have to be like, okay, this is it. And it's going to fit all of these, you know, landscapes that the sound's going to land on. I guess, can you go into like how in the mastering process that is thought of?
In terms of how to balance, maybe I'm not sure.
Like how it's considered, like how to balance, how, like when you're like, is that all, would you say that's also creative too? And when you're trying to figure out and problem solve of like, okay, this is going to land on Spotify versus, you know, listening to someone's cell phone versus the car.
I see. Yes, yes. Well, the good news is that all the consumer playback devices and really professional playback devices are designed to handle contemporary music. And meaning that they're optimized to playback music that's been mastered and produced and mastered to fit into a very broad window, but a window nonetheless, in terms of level, dynamic range, overall frequency spectrum. So if you are balancing audio while monitoring through speakers that are tuned and you're familiar with, new cars sound pretty darn balanced. That's a good reference point. You know, if you get your studio, your home studio, or your professional studio, and you tune it, you integrate the speakers to the room, you move around furniture, get your bass in order, get your walls absorbing and all of that, diffusing and absorbing, get it to a place of where it starts sounding more and more familiar to you. And the way you do that is by putting on reference material that is mastered and been out in the world and you like and you know. You tune your room to start sounding more familiar until you just know it. You're be on the straight and narrow. You're gonna aim and you're gonna come up with balances that are going to be suited for everything that's designed to play back music in today's world, meaning cell phones, cars, headphones, nightclubs. As long as they're tuned right, you're gonna hit that target. So more than ever, playback devices, playback environments are, there's less of a variance in terms of, this one sounds really, really bassy. This one sounds really, really high-endy. Of course you have that, but there's also a point of where you can master one thing and it'll translate everywhere as long as it's done right. What's more to key in on is leaving your project, your master in a place that is best suited for the mix and how the mix is presented. In other words, if a mix is mixed in such a way that is a little bit more delicate, but you want it to live next to, the new, Kanye West record, which is very aggressively produced in terms of its mixing and its mastering, you'd be doing that mix a disservice. And you flip that around and you take a mix that is on that, maybe a more hyped record, and you want it to live next to something that's a lot more delicate, you might not be fully realizing that in terms of where it wants to live. So a good mastering engineer, an experienced mastering engineer, will have an idea of what is best suited in terms of its processing for that music. Mm-hmm. And there is a window in terms of where that can be. And that's a whole other, I could spend an hour just talking about that. Yeah, but that's kind of, if that answers your question in a roundabout way, if you do this process with your musical senses and you let that guide you versus kind of trying to make something, force something into a certain place of comparing else, you'll probably end up with something really good, and it'll translate across the various platforms and playback devices.
My other question for you is kind of what excites you when you hear, like, maybe it's a mix that came to you, like what are some of the things that excites you and then kind of gets you into that creative, like gets you right into the flow?
Well, it can be anything that's interesting musically. Mm-hmm. I'm a musician. So anything musically interesting is always, something that I get excited about, and it can be any type of genre. I really like working on orchestral music. I work a lot on a lot of film scores, but I work on every genre, work on a lot of metal, hip hop, jazz, blues, country music, Americana, you name it. So anything that's musically interesting, I tend to enjoy. But sometimes it's just a message behind a song, lyrics can really pull me in. I like hearing people's minds at work in the music. I like hearing, I can see what they got into there, or I can see how those two, how that guitar solo weaves over that key change in a creative way that is a mind at work in all the different ways. So I tune into that, but it's my own enjoyment in this process is not needed. It's not necessary because it's fun. But my involvement is not required for me. It's not required for me to enjoy it, actually. It's required for me to bring the most out of what it is.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hired to do. So, whether I really, really like it or not is actually less important.
Very true. And I noticed also that that you're always about bringing the best out of what is given. So you're really kind of like, you add the extra kind of sauce at the end, the sound maker, you're now kind of the one shaping that end process that everyone gets to hear. And I feel like that's just such an important factor that adds and enhances the creative side from the artist, from the writer, all that. Can you go into a few top things that when you're listening to something, like maybe three things that you want to embellish, I guess, your vibe,
I think that if you start keying into specifics, you end up missing the mark because it can be all. I think that's where a lot of people actually get tripped up in the process, is they feel like, oh, does this have enough bass, or does this have enough top end, or is this, you know, element within the mix loud or too loud? And of course, all of that stuff, you can end up zeroing in on something and actually lose focus of where you're trying to get to, you know, where you're trying to get to. If you keep your mind's eye on the end result, the end place of where you're trying to bring something to, all of those things will kind of fall into place along the way by default. So it's more about, you know, finding where you want to end up, instead of, you know, looking at the top of the mountain, in other words, and not worrying about all the things in the way. Just get there and all those things will kind of even out along the way.
Yeah, I can relate to that, because I was recently on a hike and I'm just like, okay, when is this trail going to end? But I was like, okay, I'm going to get to the like waterfall, I swear. And so I just kept going. And I feel like if you just kind of think of the end point, you end up getting there instead of like focusing too much on the detail. Like, oh, this guitar riff is this chord arrangement, the right like way. I think like you kind of get too in your head, I guess, and then you're out of flow.
You can, but if you're starting out, you kind of have to go through a lot of that. You have to go through a lot of, you know, before you can rely on your intuition, which is something that's developed like anything else. You have to go through all of the doubt and all of the second guessing and all of the, you know, before it starts becoming very clear and obvious to you in second nature. You have to go through all of that. But as you're going through all of that struggle, as you're going through all of that inner turmoil, you're, you don't know you are, you know, how many, you know, in my early 20s, how many, you know, 2 p.m. or, you know, or excuse me, rather 2 a.m. sessions, you know, working way into the night until you just, you're blue in the face thinking, okay, I got to come back the next morning and redo everything. And then proving that you're actually better if you redid it, you know, and you're learning through all of that by comparing what you first did versus what you did, you know, after the fact. That's all part of this. And then through all of that turmoil and that growing, you start developing your intuition, and then you start developing that inner knowing of where something is when it's really right. And that's the difference between, you know, as I was saying before, you know, the novices kind of relying on the tools and the samples to get them, you know, to a place of where it sounds good, but it's not, they're not masters of what they do yet, because they haven't necessarily put in all of those 10,000 and plus hours, you know, of what, and that's the only unfortunate part about, you know, I see that the studios have closed, the mentor-protege relationships are very rare these days. YouTube is a mentor, that you don't get enough of that knowledge passing. A lot of the new generation coming up, they're having to learn this only from, you know, YouTube and these platforms. They don't really get that tutelage that I was given and that Gavin was given. And I get from, I got early on from Gavin, and he got through Doug Sachs, and all of this information was passed to me. I'm grateful, because I feel like I started out or already standing on the shoulders of giants. They've already gone through all of this, you know, trial and error, and trying one way and then trying another. So I can just begin at this point, you know? So I was very fortunate. Of course, we have software that gives you that a little bit. And we have these tutorials, and the information is great out there. It's just a different world. So at the end of the day, there's no shortcuts to learning this stuff. It really does take just sitting in front of the computer now, sitting in front of monitors, and just doing that day in, day out. And then over time, you'll look back and you'll be like, oh man, I've actually gone quite pretty far up this mountain now, you know?
Yeah.
Another
analogy. So true. And with creativity, what I ask each of my guests is to give us one word of inspiration or something that really connects with you. What would that one word be around creativity?
Letting it flow, you know, just letting it come through you, and just trusting that, and learning to, you know, learning what it means for you to get yourself into the place of where you can let it flow. Because that's as much of the process as anything else, you know, because it doesn't always come to you the same way every day, you know. So getting really good at getting yourself to tune yourself to then tune the music, if that makes sense.
Wow, that was like the perfect pun, like all about the tuning, right? And kind of tuning your creativity. And where can some of our listeners kind of, if they want to work with you, collaborate, their artists, they want to reach out, where are some of the places that they can find you to connect?
Well, our website, lersonmaster.com, that's the easiest way.
Yeah. Okay.
And then we're all on our social media too. You know, we have our own studio, Lurson Mastering Instagram. I have my own personal, Ruben Cohen. I'm easy to find. Just type in my name. You'll see it. It's Ruben underscore Cohen 1111. Yeah, those are really, we're easy to find. Email and website.
Well, thanks so much, Ruben, for being on the Limitless podcast. We're all about connecting and creativity. And as you said, your word is to let it flow. So it's all about flowing. And I hope that we helped inspire some amazing creatives to just keep going and keep flowing and keep being creative. So thanks so much, Ruben, for being on.
Thank you, Lori. I appreciate you having me on, too.
No problem. Take care.